Welcome to Land Speed Legends, a podcast talking to the men, the women, the legends that make land speed racing great. Discover the stories of these ordinary people whose passion for land speed racing has made them legendary. And now, here's your host, the Bonneville Belle, the High Boy Honey, the Salt Princess, Allison Volk Dean.
Today, I have the legendary Danny Burrow with me. Danny was just telling me that his land speed career really begins when he meets George Poteet.
Well, I met George in about 89, I guess it was. We were at Knoxville NSRA event. I had a little 29 sedan delivery, and he come out. He liked the little truck, so he came out, and I talked to him and got acquainted with him that time. That was the first time. And then the next year or months down the road, we were at some local shows around Memphis and those areas, and one of my friends over there in Memphis was a Memphis street rodder, and he worked for George then. And so that's when I met him for the second time, and I bought a Cummins Attractions chassis from him, a 32 Ford chassis. I wanted to build a 34 Ford, and he said, well, I got one. And so I wound up buying it from him, and it's the first time we interacted, you know, on a monetary basis.
Yeah.
But then I got acquainted with him, and then my friend told him who I was, what I did. And a few months later, he...
What was it that you did? Who were you?
I mean, well, me and my brother had a trucking company.
Oh, okay.
And we were running trucks, you know, all around. And I told him, you know, what we did, because he always inquired, but what do you do for a living? It's, but as time went on, another, you know, 8-10 months down the road, George bought a 48-foot trailer with a Ford, like a 550 with a living quarters in the back. And he had never driven anything that big or such. And so he came up to me one day and he said, how would you like to go to a turkey rod run with me? And I said, well, what's a turkey rod run? He said, well, it's a rod run in Daytona Beach at the racetrack. I said, I'm in. He said, well, I need somebody to drive this big rig for me. And he said, I'll pay for everything, your rooms and your food. And he said, we'll go down and have a good time. And I thought, man, yeah, you know, this guy's going to pay for the whole trip. So I just drive him down there, you know. So that's the first time I interacted with him, you know, on a deal like that. And then from then on, anytime he wanted to go somewhere, he'd call me, hey, can you get away? And I said, yeah, it's not hard. I own the company. We got hooked up that way. And then this Thanksgiving will be 33 years, the first time we did something together.
That's fun.
It's been unbelievable that it's been that long. It turned into a full-time job, of course, later, you know. But
so you just kind of worked for him privately?
Oh, yeah.
You ended up just, yeah.
I've been there probably on a full-time basis for 25 years of that, but actually on and off, you know, for the 33.
Yeah. Are you doing driving? Is that what you do, basically?
Mainly. I do... anytime he buys a car at a show or online or whoever, I go get the car, bring it back in.
Gotcha.
Anything he's having built all over the country. I mean, there was one year we had 18 projects being built in one year. One year, I thought. I walked in his office one day. He's just writing checks. I said, are you having a good time? He said, well, kind of. He said, it is a bit much. But I run all the shops, delivering, picking up, car shows, SEMA. I did all of his transportation and everything. And that was a full-time job.
Yeah, absolutely.
I ran in the beginning. Oh, as we really progressed, you know, 5 years down the road, I was logging miles and stuff, and there was a few years in a row that I run 80,000 miles a year in all of our equipment, just moving and picking up. We were busy.
Yeah. So how did you guys get into land speed racing? What was the deal?
Living out in the heartland like we do.
Which is Tennessee?
Well, he does. I live in Arkansas.
Oh, you live in Arkansas, that's right.
I live north of Memphis, about 75 miles, and that's about as close to Memphis as I want to be. But I The only thing I'd ever watched about or seen on Land Speed Racing was in Hot Rod Magazine and in Wide World of Sports. Once in a while, you'd see Breed Love or somebody, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. running out here. And we thought, man, that's awesome. But that seemed like that was on the other side of the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
So 1 year, George came out with a little Roadster, flathead, ran 125 miles an hour, called me. You ain't going to believe what I just did. He told me, he said, but I need a younger crew. I said, count me in. So that was about 2000, maybe somewhere in there.
Yeah.
Right in that area that we started coming out here, and we were just crewing for him. And we bought one car, and then he had another car, 32, that he had built, and we had a guy that fixed us up with a Jack Ralph NASCAR motor.
Mm.
So we put that in there. So that was a pretty stout little 32 Roadster.
Yeah.
I think we run 215s or 20s in it, just, you know. But after George had ran a few of those and a few years in those cars, and Ron Main approached him about sponsorship on the Echo Fire.
Mm.
And then it was the, we was running a, he wasn't the Echo Fire then, but oh, it was Echo Tech. Mm. Chevrolet had sponsored the little Echo Tech engine, and it was doing pretty good. But anyway, he approached George on about some sponsorship if he would be interested in. He said, well, if I can drive the car, he said, that won't be a problem. So that's how Speed Demon, that's what evolved out of that.
Yeah, out of the Echo Fire.
And then just about the time that they really got going good, Troy was building the Blowfish.
Mm.
And so we came out here 1 year, and George's trying to drive both of them. I have to tell you, that's a handful. If you get qualified for one, I mean,
yeah.
And the other one, this ain't going to work. You ain't backing both of them up, you know. So I kept standing in the back, raising my hand, you know. Finally, the second year, they put me in it. And he said, I'm going to just let you run to the three. He said, because you've never driven anything with this more horsepower. I said, you're right, I hadn't. So I didn't set the record, but I was 0.2 mile an hour off the record at the three. Just, you know, getting a little seat time. But anyway, I run on, after a couple of passes, we went to the four, and then I set the record about 30 miles above what it was at the four, because it was such a fast car.
Oh, the Blowfish. And how you got your three chapter hat. Is that right?
That's where I got the two.
Oh, you got the two club.
I set a 278 record. Mm. It was a 249 record. I raised it 278 at the 4 mile.
Wow.
So next year we came back with the big blown engine. I was running big gas then. That was Tom Berkland's record.
Oh, wow.
That was a big record.
Yeah.
I think 293 or somewhere in that area. And the first pass I ran 300 miles an hour. the exit speed like 301 or something.
Oh, man.
Just a tick. I knew we were going fast, but of course, I'd never been that fast. But the year before, I run a 280-something and a 270-something and averaged a 278. So I'd been close, but I had never driven anything with that much horsepower. And a turbo engine that's a different beast than, you know, anything else.
Uh-huh.
But I was paying a lot of attention and getting a lot of advice, and George was giving me some, you know, but he was pretty busy. He had his hands full then with the Speed Demon. But he was encouraging us a lot, and we kept going. So that year, that would have been 11. And it's some of the best salt, you know, out here. I mean, it was absolutely a highway.
Yeah.
We didn't even change courses that year.
Yeah.
We stayed on the number one course all the time. And we made 5 passes that year over 300.
Wow.
I mean, we could do no wrong. And the last pass, well, next to the last pass, I ran a 319 exit.
Mm.
We never topped out the car. We just ran out of track.
Yeah.
It was still going. So the backup run, I was backing up a 315 something something mile per hour at the five. I was backing that up, and at the four, the engine, I burnt 2 pistons. It was the 5th pass that year. And when we looked at the the timing sheets and stuff, I was 8 mile an hour faster at the 4 than I was when I ran the 3:19 at the 5. So we knew we were going to touch 325 to 330, maybe a little more, but it was moving. But I burned a piston at the 4, and it was slowed down that whole mile, and I still went through a 300. So I had an average of 307.
And that's how you got in.
That's how I got the red hat. And so.
Wait, the red hat or the blue hat?
I meant the blue hat. Yeah, that's when I got the blue hat. Yeah. I had the red hat the year before.
Yeah.
And, but it was such, I mean, we just had so much fun. We go home and Troy, he's doing turn wrenches. You know, we're going to the moon next year. And we come back next year. We couldn't do anything.
Welcome to Bonneville.
Welcome to Saw Flats. When you think you know this place, it's going to bite you in the butt real good. And we spun it out at 265.
Wow.
I was at the 2 mile. It was the year before was a beast, but this son of a gun had turned into a living monster. They had so much horsepower in this engine. We gained approximately 800 to 900 more horsepower in that motor for the next year. And I looked at Troy. He called me on the phone. They were on the dyno up there in Illinois, and he's screaming, "Man, we got 200. I mean, we got 2,800 horsepower." And all that. I said, "For what? we can't use that out there." "Well, we'll just use it in high gear." I thought, I don't know about this, you know. I mean, we were running 1,500, 1,600 and running 320. And I'm thinking, good Lord, you know. So,
do I want to run it in high gear?
So, we're going to run methanol and the whole deal and really go to the moon. And the first pass I took off and a turbo, all I could get was 36% throttle in that car, first and second gear. It was so violent that you couldn't give it any, I mean, you just couldn't keep it under you. It's just, you know. And one other thing we didn't have, which we know now we should have had, was traction control. Because I'm the traction control, and I'm telling you, it was a handful. But once we got past the one and on down around 1.5, it started really settling down. When I got through third gear, I'm to the floor. And I mean, I'll never forget, the first pass we done, I shifted into second, and I just spun around in a circle. Nothing I did, changed the
just
car.
Just going into second did it.
And I thought, what the heck was that? You know, I mean, I lifted, cocked it real hard to the right immediately, but it didn't respond to anything. I mean, when it went sideways, I just clutched it and kicked it out of gear. And when I stopped, the first thing I noticed, the engine wasn't running. And I thought, well, that's strange. I know I didn't spin it backwards or nothing, because anytime I got that far, I'm kicking it out of gear. I don't want to turn the motor backwards. So it stopped, and Troy and him come down, and I hit second gear, and it just turned around for no reason, you know. So we'll go check it out. We go down to the pits and get it up on the jack stands going through it. Well, the tires were flat spotted. I said, "Troy, I never touched the brake." I kicked it into neutral, and it stopped on its own. And I said, "There's something is not right here." I said, "We'll find it." We messed with it for 3 or 4 hours in the pits, and we put it up. It's up on the jack stand, so he gets in it started and run through the gears. He hit second gear, and that dude liked to come off the jacks and hit, bounce, and shook, and killed the motor. I looked, and I said, I knew something was wrong. And what had happened was the pistons, the air shifters, and he had sent them back to the transmission board, you know, and they had set the timing on them, and it tried to shift into second and third at the same time, locked it up. So now the dilemma with Troy was, did we hurt the transmission?
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to get you up there, you know, 300 mile an hour and stuff and your shift or 250, you're shifting into high gear and that thing locks up, you know, so we're scared of it. So we borrow a transmission from Wayne Jessel. It wasn't set up for our car. I was shifting out of fourth gear into high gear at 320.
Oh my God.
And I said, "Troy, how far am I going to have to drive this thing in first and second?" He's at 150 in first, and you know, to shift it. And I'm thinking, my God, the hardest to drive this thing. But anyhow, we had all kinds of little obstacles, but we finally made it to the 3 mile. And when it was, I think it was the third attempt. And by this time, Troy, when I'm sitting there running, he buckles me up. When he starts shut the door, he says, go to the 5. I don't care if it's 100 miles an hour. I said, I'll meet you down there. He pushed me off and I'm, and I mean, I babied that dude. And I got down around the 2. I was running decent, but I mean, I'm not going to spend, we're going to the 5 now.
Yeah.
When I got down to the 2, it's going pretty good. I'm at the top side of third gear, so I kind of get after it a little bit. And man, that thing shot out of there like a cannon. And once you get over a little over 200 in that car, we got 1,000 pounds of downforce on the hood. And aerodynamics on that. And it's just like a rocket ship. It drives so good up there. So I stayed after it, and I got out down there, and I thought, boy, that thing run pretty good, you know, for messing around. They come pulling down there, and I said, how fast we go? He said, 300. I said, you're crazy. I said, I know you, baby. We thought we were going to pass you in the push truck, you know. And so anyway, I said, don't touch it. I said, we'll get 325 or 3. I said, it's got it. I said, just leave it alone. I know how to drive it. So we come back to the pits, and we're mooling around, you know, getting everything ready for the next day. And so we come out the next day, and I thought, this is going to be good, you know. So we get going. We push off and get going, and I'm staying in it decent as much as I could first and second. But when I got into third, I really started getting after it, and man, it took off. Mm. And I knew how hard this car was pulling. It wasn't like the year before. It was really going. And I thought, man, we're fixing to hit fourth gear, and we're going to the moon, because we're over 200 with the downforce. And now it's where it drives the best, Alan. I'm telling you, that car drove so good over 200, I couldn't believe it. And we had good salt. And I hit fourth gear, and I thought, we're trucking. And as soon as it went into fourth gear, it wasn't a second, the red light come over fifth, and it spun me around backwards in a nanosecond. I was backwards. It spun right through fourth gear, went right in.
You were in fourth gear?
I was in fourth gear.
How fast were you going?
I was running 265 at the 2. And it went out from under me. And when we got the data, I flat spun a mile and a quarter.
Oh, my God.
That's got to be close to record. I went off at the 2. Me and Lee went down there in Kennedy. And he said, well, here's where you went off at the 2. And we measured it with a roller.
Oh, my gosh.
For a little ways. And then we saw where I come back down. Because it went airborne backwards, but it ripped the deck lid off, which was really what saved us, because there was a long wing behind it.
Yeah.
And it really picked it up. You know, like a NASCAR, when they're running 200 or back, it done the same thing.
Mm.
But with the second spin, the left wheel drug the ground, and then by the third spin, it stayed on the ground. But I flat spun that dude a mile. I went past the timing stand.
What did it feel like? That's pretty crazy.
That's a long flat spin. And
that's,
you know,
a long spin.
But I just turned it into the spins, you know, and saved the front end. You're not. They're wasting your time braking or pulling chutes. Are you going to wrap it up in the car and maybe turn it over? But Lee was one of the first ones down. He said, what happened? I said, I ain't sure, but we overpowered the salt real bad. I said, this thing went into orbit. So Troy and them, they all got down, and we got in the pits. And I'll tell you something that was funny. From the time I started driving, Troy was real adamant. He wanted me to make me as comfortable as I could be.
Mm.
He said, now listen to me. This car won't spin. I looked at him. I said, oh, shit. I know better. And I said, it's a car, Troy. He said, I know, but it won't spin. I'm telling you. Our roof rail and this, that, and the wind. They said, it gets a little out. He said, it won't spin. I said, get out of town, you know. So 2 years later, after he's telling me, you know, even the 300 mile an hour, and I remember, this car won't spin. I said, shut the door. You know, I've been in the car longer than you've been in them. So it spins out, flat spin at a mile and a quarter, rips the deck lid off, concave both doors, the passenger door and the driver door. The air was so hard against it, just like,
wow,
like you need it. Didn't tear anything, just bowled them in, busted them in. So we didn't really do a lot of damage to the car, but he come walking in the pits, and the car's backing it, they're backing it in on the trailer, and I'm sitting there, so I plopped my helmet down on the table, and I looked everybody. I said, I thought you told me that car wouldn't spin. He said, I meant to tell you it wouldn't turn over. Because we did turn it over. That
spin. I said, by spin, I meant turnover.
So by then, this is something not very well known, but you know how racing is. You make mistakes. The engine builder sticks his head out the trailer, and they're downloading the information, the run and everything. He says, hey, Dale, he said, how much boost did you have in that car? He looked at him. He said, well, he said, I added 2 pounds to high gears off. I said, I thought I told y'all not to touch that car. He said, well, Troy said, just put 2 pounds in high gear. I said, that's where I went into orbit. And the engine builder, Bob, said, well, we're looking at 26 pounds. He said, you didn't get the 14 race to put 16 in. You put 16 on top of 14.
Oh, my gosh.
When I hit high gear, I'm to the floor. I'm talking, Allison, in 2 seconds, the shift light was on. Mm. The computer sold 265 to around 270 when it went backwards, but it was spinning 340.
Oh, my God.
That's how hard that engine was pulling.
Woo.
So we don't know what that car would have done, but it's like everything. Coulda, shoulda, woulda. You know, yeah. If we hadn't done it, but it really.
But it went fast. It was going fast.
Oh, it was awesome. But anyway, we didn't really hurt the car. So after that, there was a few guys standing in the back that was wanting to, you know, get in the 2 Club, and I'm in the 3 already, and we're not going to go 400 in that comp coupe. Yeah, let's let some guys drive. So his son-in-law came out, and we started doing stuff with him, and then a couple of Dale, the tuner, Jerry, he wanted, so, you know, he'd been driving some for Wayne Jessel, and he had gotten in the coupe, but that's a really privilege to drive that car.
Yeah,
it's such a good car.
And it's a beautiful
car. It's a pretty car, but it's a functional car.
Yeah.
So.
Where is it at now?
It's out in the parking lot in the trailer.
Oh, it is?
Well, one of the guys that was going to drive it, he was going to start Saturday, and there was about a 240 record, something like that. He was going to own gas, unblown, and try to get him in the 2 Club. And but his son drives a truck series, and he's really big in that. And his dad, I mean, he follows him everywhere he goes. So he had to leave Wednesday morning. We weren't going to start racing till Tuesday. So if he's qualified for the record, he wouldn't be able to back it up.
Yeah.
So then we got to thinking, well, we don't know if we're going to have a track even by Tuesday. It was speculation that we would. So he said, well, I'm going to go on and take care of this. And so we just got together, made the decision. We'll come back in the fall, or USAF, one of the two. So it's never been on the soft this year. It's sitting in a trailer up there, but we're coming back with that. But
yeah.
But that's kind of how my racing really evolved, from running 61 Ford Fairlane, Starliners with Jack Roush Cup motors, and they barely run 200 because, I mean, they were a handful of stock cars.
Yeah.
They weren't modified. So, but when we went to the wind tunnel, I thought I knew a little bit about cars, but I knew nothing when I went in that wind tunnel.
Yeah, that's right here.
The stuff I learned about the air on cars, and then you watch the Indy cars and the NASCARs and all those guys, and they know how you can dial a car in a wind tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the least little thing that you don't even recognize was just incredible to see the difference in the way the car would handle.
Or you think it's the pressure's coming, you know, the downforce coming from somewhere that it's not coming.
Well, when we had 1,000 pounds of downforce in the car with the air, we didn't have to put as much weight in the front end.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with that, if you want to call it a problem, the more weight you put in it, the more the engine has to overcome. You know, you got more weight going down through there.
Mm-hmm.
So when you let the air do the downforce, you don't have to put as much weight in it. It's just a better, you know, setup than if you have to load the weight in one to keep it on the ground.
Yeah.
But that car was, I tell you right now, when we were in the wind tunnel, Terry Kanonik was the wind tunnel guy for Chrysler.
Uh-huh.
And of course, there wasn't a lot of people driving Chryslers and stuff. And he got acquainted with those guys when he built the Blowfish.
Yeah.
I mean, not the Blow, but the Sniper.
Okay.
The Plymouth. And Chrysler got on board because they're buying hot rodding. We're doing Ford and Chevys mainly. And then, so they knew Troy. And so we got hooked up with those guys. And they said, yeah, come on up and we'll let you use the wind tunnel at night. So that's how we dialed that in. But he told us when we got done that he said the air on that car was two decimals less than a GT40.
Oh, wow.
That's how good they had that car.
Wow.
So that's one of the reasons that the car ran. You know, we've only had like, what, six, seven comp coupes run over 300.
Hmm.
So it's, you know, you're getting up in a door slammer. You're getting up there in some dangerous
absolutely.
Air.
Absolutely. Yes.
But that car, I never had any fear because, I mean, anything can happen. I don't care how good they're dialed in, but we had good salt.
Yeah.
And it was just like really
good car, good salt.
Back then, it was like driving down the freeway.
Yeah.
We were doing it fast, but it stayed straight.
Mm.
And so, George, he brought so many people to the table. He has this, I mean, we have done stuff for other people didn't even know. I mean, he has given money to people to help them because they wanted to and didn't have it. And, you know, when Andy Nish was coming up, he let him have that little 32 Roadster.
Yeah.
And said, let him learn in this.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Terry and Mike and all them, that, you know, they were just having a ball with it.
Yeah,
and,
that was fun.
He said, I'll sell it to you for like $20. When you get done with it, I'll buy it back for $20.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny.
No, that's a neat deal.
Yeah. But, that's really cool. Well, what about your other racing, like the camel toe racing? What was that?
That was the 32 Ford.
Okay.
We had Memphis Street Rods on it, camel toe. This emblem right here on the deck lid.
Oh, yeah.
Because we went started going by the name Camel Toe Racing about 99.
Yeah.
I mean, about 99. I guess it was. We were at the Memphis Motorsports. Big boys were there to drag race, and we had, George had a suite, you know, right behind the starting line.
Mm-hmm.
It's between rounds, and there's some, we can see the bleachers real good, and there's some pretty girls getting up, and they really wearing some nice shorts.
And you thought, oh, that's a good name for a race
Holy
team.
Cow, you know, look at the camel toe right here. So, anyway, George looked, he said, you know, we could be camel toe racing. We all start laughing. Well, the next thing we know, he shows up with some calves.
Oh my gosh.
And I said, holy cow. We tried to, after about 3 years, we had a Edsel Ford with a camel driving it, his head above the windshield, and his tongue flying behind his head. And it said camel toe racing. And it was awesome. The color in that, it was, and we had, when we go to car shows, everybody was trying to find where they could buy one of those shirts.
Yep.
And we tried to get George, let us start something. He said, no, we're not going to do that. He said, we're just going to be who we are. And, but he would send them one free. If somebody wanted one, he said, give me your address, I'll send you
Oh
one.
My gosh. I know that I have people in my pits that covet their camel toe racing shirt. They got one somehow. I don't know, maybe George, I got them through you. Or
well, George, we gave a few, but I said George, I got some guys want some shirts, and he said, all right, go ahead and give them a few, you know. But we run the 32 camel toe racing, the 61 Starliner. We had that down the whole side of the car. When we come down the return lane, they're standing up, just clapping, raising the hell. We ran 200 miles an hour, and that 61 Starliner, you know. It didn't like it, but it was a blast.
It didn't like it.
And I finally got, you know, people like Brizio and Chip and some of those guys out here, because they hadn't come. And Roy come out, and I put him in that 32. And the next year, you know, he had a car. Him and his partner. They come back with the car, and they race.
Got the bug, huh?
He said, I got to stop this. He said, I can't do this and build all these cars. He said, I got too much going on to do this. But he said, it's a blast. But I think I licensed probably, we got to counting one day, and I know I licensed about 30 people in 2 or 3 years in those two cars, the 61 and the 32. So anybody we knew come out from Classic Instruments to Detroit Speed.
Yeah. That's awesome to get Benny people Jair, to come in and get them guys interested.
They were all friends of ours through Hot Rod.
Yeah.
So they wanted to come out and watch this run. And so we got them set up. And we said, well, we got some uniforms. Come out. We'll make let you run a 125 to 150 pass. And they just loved it. They got it licensed, you know. So we did that for several years. And then, like I say, we progressed into what we did. And But we've got, me and Troy, we talk a lot, because those were the really good days when we were really, you know, doing something that it meant a lot to us, but it was something because Kugels was the first 300-mile-an-hour car.
Mm-hmm.
And those guys, you know, they run that Firebird, and I thought, you got to be kidding me. Those guys ran 300, you know. And, of course, I knew those guys a little bit, and George knew the dad a lot, you know, a lot better, but I got to knowing those guys, and I've been to their shop a few times and stuff, and they would talk about the Blowfish. I said, look, you were the first one.
Yeah. There's only one first, right?
You were number one. I said, well, you guys did then. I said, you know, we're 10 years or 7, 8 years later down the road, and there's been a lot of stuff that's been engineered and fixed or done this or that. But I said, you're the pioneer. So they're really great people.
They are.
And, but we just, it's just been such a, for 25 years thereabouts now. It's just been an unbelievable ride for a guy from Arkansas.
Yeah. Oh,
and I'll tell you a funny story. When I got in the two club, we had a little function there at home, and the mayor was out there.
Mm-hmm.
And they, one of the guys that was did all the sports writing, he knew me. I mean, I was known a little bit around town, not, you know, a lot, but I played football at one of the Jonesboro High School was there, and mm-hmm. Devlin High School was over here, and West Side's over here, but Jonesboro was the big boys, you know.
Yeah.
So I got a little notoriety playing football out there, and so when I started racing, then we're way down the road from there.
Mm-hmm.
This guy's still working there. And I told him one day out there, I said, hey, I said, I'm running Bonneville. He said, oh, man. He said, I want to go. I've never been in my life. He said, it's my bucket list. I said, well, you just tell me when you want to go. I said, I'll get you, you know, press passes, take you down. You'll get to go where the public, you know, the spectators can't go. And I said, you can follow around and take pictures. Oh, he's on board. He's next thing I know, he's coming out to my shop and I'm packing up and he's got me packing my uniform and all the stuff in there, you know, and everything. And this local guy's going to Bonneville to race, you know, and he's got my picture.
That's awesome.
So
some
of the people got to watching it, you know. And so I set the B record on gas that year, 200 mph. I got in the 2 Club. Well, that next spring, we're at a car show. And I've got a lot of ink at home, just local town, you know, and 100,000 people. And the mayor's out there, and I walk up to him, and I knew him. And I said, hello, Harold, how you doing? He said, good. And he said, hey, I like your write-up. You know, that's pretty neat, you know, going that fast in a car. I said, well, I've had it back out there in about 2 months, and I said, I'm going to go over 300 like that. He said, are you kidding me? And I said, no. And I said, if I do, I want a street named after me. He said, bring me that record. I said, all right. So we're out here, and I busted. I got the record, and I'm walking across the salt to the pits. Your dad had just inducted me, you know, into the 3 Club.
Yeah.
And my phone rings. I look at it, and it says, Jonesboro, Arkansas. Who is that? And I answered it, and he said, hey, Danny. I said, yeah. He said, Harold Paring, Mayor Jonesboro. I said, yeah, who is this really? He said, no, it's me. He said, I'm painting your sign like that. And I started laughing. I said, that's really you. So they got me a street, you know.
Nice. Do you ever drive down it?
Oh, it's just a short one, but I didn't care. You
know? It's a short one.
It was kind of a cut through road, but it's right on between the two biggest, nice, you know, 4-lane drives out there. You, but it was a neat deal. You
I
know?
Love that.
He said, I'm painting your sign.
but
I threw rocks at him first. I said, this ain't Harold Paring. But the editor called him, said, hey, he just broke that record. And he said, what's his phone number?
That's
it's
so
neat,
awesome.
It's a neat deal. So I got a lot of crap over that from everybody, you know. But it's been a fun ride. And then everybody else you meet, you know.
I
mean, the people out here, we've had, you know, and Tom Berkland. I got to say this about Tom. I was sitting on the starting line to back up that record of his. I've run 3, and I'm backing this record up. And he comes walking by me. I'm sitting on the starting line. I'll never forget it. Bends down there, and he says, get that record. It's time somebody else had it.
Aw, that's so cool.
Awesome.
Tom is so cool.
It was awesome. So that was a cool thing I'll never forget, too. We just met so many people that we knew about by reading, you know, Bonneville stuff, and but never dreamed in our life that us guys from the heartland back in Arkansas would ever come out here and meet people like that.
Mm.
You know, like yesterday, sit over there with Mr. Pink,
uh-huh,
for 2 days, take him down a course. He ran out here in 53.
Well, who is this? Who's Mr. Pink?
Ed Pink.
Oh, Ed Pink. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Wow.
And he's hanging out with two days. And so we take him down to the, you know, the end of the course when the car makes a run. And he said, when we came out here, we just turned off the interstate. Right out on the
salt. There was a different entrance.
Yeah, everything was different. But you read about people that your whole life, the things they've done, and they come out here, and they're just people.
Yeah.
But they're just such nice people, you know. It's like the Brizios. They just, the top of the line in racing, they treat everybody the same. That's the good part about racers. I mean, there's very few of them that's high-headed or stuff like that. People come in the pits and, you know, timid and stuff. Or, am I going to get in the way? Come in, take a look, you know, and meet George. And he, you know.
Yeah, you guys are great about it, too, and really friendly, the Bay Area. And you guys are running a big, you know, ordeal down there.
It's a big production. But George has never forgot where he come from.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the Mississippi dirt poor.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And he's never forgot where he's come from. And he's been blessed so much with money.
Yeah.
It's his own makings. It's not been handed to him. But he shared it with a lot of people.
That's so cool.
When I was inducted, I told him, you know, he was talking about Al Teague being his hero and all that stuff. At his thing. But a couple of years later, I'm standing there getting a three hat. When I got done, I said, George Poteet is my friend. He's my boss, but he's my hero.
Oh, that's so
it was
sweet.
It was a neat deal to get to do. But he's just that kind of guy. And I remember some guy was giving him a hard time about, you know, a lot of people saying you're just buying these races out here and stuff and everything with your money. He said, well, I can tell you right now. He said, it costs a lot of money to go fast.
Yeah.
He said, but I am driving the car. I am the one driving the car, you know.
So putting his butt on the line, yeah.
But the whole deal has just been so much fun. And Bonneville, never dreamed in my wildest dreams that that we'd ever be doing what we're doing right now. And we're all just people that love cars and sport. And
that's right.
Like going fast. It's a dangerous sport sometimes, but we do it as safely as we can.
Yeah.
It's a good crew out here, the safety crews. And, you know, we caught the speed demon. We had a little injector fire yesterday on that. The fireman was there. As soon as we had that body up there, we've got fire equipment on board, but they're right there. You know,
yeah.
Everybody just closes in. And so they made it really a really safe sport to be going fast. I mean, you're running 300 and 400 miles an hour.
Yeah.
I know George's last miles when he's running 430s or 440s at the four. Mm-hmm. I tell guys at home and I said, we ran a 465. And they said, wait a minute. You were running 435 or 440 at the four and you only gained 30 miles an hour in a mile? I said, no, we gained 30 miles an hour in 8 seconds.
Yeah, that's right.
Then they realized the speed.
Yeah.
You know, you say, well, he's got a whole mile to make speed. No, he's got 8 seconds because from the four to the five at that speed, it's 2 second quarters.
That's a lot different. Then that puts it in perspective.
They figured out how fast that really is. And just saying 480.
Yep.
It's 8 seconds a mile on the ground, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just incredible with a one engine, you know, single axle, not four wheel drive or anything, you know.
The speed demons, they
can hook it up like that.
The speed demon's cool. And I think, you know, I interview a lot of people that have been coming out for a long time and you say, like, what's your favorite car that you've seen run? And they'll say Al Teague and other cars. But I think younger kids are going to, you know, later on will be like, what car do you remember the most? The speed demon is very influential on my kids. Just the name of it, the way it looks, you know what I mean? And that's the ones that they're going to be saying. In 20 years, what car did you really remember? And it's going to be that.
Absolutely.
That one is
one
of them.
That's the difference in the communication in the country now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the internet and all that stuff. You know, back when those guys were in, it's ABC, Wild Water Sports or Hot Rod now.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's once a year, ABC, Wild World Sports or something, if they come out here with those guys. But now there's so much internet stuff. There's people watching live all over the world.
Yeah.
And it's really sent out, you know, the mecca to this country and the world, what's going on here, that, you know, back in our day, we'd just get a little information out of it.
Yeah.
And most
after
of it
happened.
Most of it, as you know, we're California people in this area here.
Yeah.
Most of us back there, we thought this other side of the world come all the way out there, you know, the side of Utah. But it's just, he's, George, you know, I mean, he don't like to brag. He won't brag on himself. And he don't like so much. He's not looking for media. He's such a reserved person, even in his hot rod cars.
Mm-hmm.
He don't build those cars to win trophies. He builds them for the pleasure. And he gives these guys, well, like people like Troy. Troy was the first really paying customer for Troy.
Mm.
And he built them that Viper.
Yeah.
I mean, the Sniper with the Viper engine and all that stuff. And it went totally in every automotive magazine in the world, that car did.
Mm.
The Hot Rod magazine said, this car has been in every car magazine in the world. And Troy, he give him the opportunity to show you what he can do, because the money wasn't the object, it's to see what you can do. And all the guys behind him that's been down that road, he's done them the same way. And it's like he didn't go to build, you know, the Sniper 54 Plymouth Savoy in order to win all the accolades and all the trophies.
He built it because he wanted to.
Because he wanted to. And he's just that kind of a person. He's built a lot of nice cars, but he's given a lot of young builders the opportunity, and it's helped them in their careers, too.
I love that.
because they were had basically unlimited money to a degree.
Yeah.
He gave them a direction to go and then kind of stood back and let's see what you can do.
Cool.
So it really helped a lot of them.
Yeah, you guys have a great crew, and it's obviously you guys are very inclusive to people. Yeah, you know,
going down to the car farm, I mean, we had basically around 100 cars that we stalled down there. We had 7 or 8 different buildings, and I'm in and out. I didn't go there every day because I'm on the road.
Mm-hmm.
So when I come in, I come down to Holly Springs and unload, maybe pick up something, or I leave with the rig back to my house in Arkansas and I leave from there the next week.
Mm.
So it's not like I'm driving back and forth every day.
Yeah.
Because actually from my house to Holly Springs, the south of Memphis, was about 100-mile drive.
Mm.
But I'm down there once a week or every other week. So.
Nice.
So it was a really neat setup, and I just kept the equipment in my house because I had a place to keep it in the shop and everything. So it's a really nice setup, and we just talked on the phone. You need to go here and go there sometime. I'd unload car at my house, not even go down there, you know.
Well, you must have done something good because you got pretty lucky.
I've been driving a long time. When I first, like I said, helped him when he got that big rig, and he said, won't you go to work for me full time? And I said, well, I'm in the middle of a company right now, but I said, we're doing pretty good the way we are, but now, and so he said, okay. So another, I don't know, year or year and a half later, won't you go to work for me full time? I believe I'm going to take you up this time. I'm ready to get out of this what I'm doing, you know? So
this running my business isn't this.
Yeah. So it's nice. Been 33 years with him this Thanksgiving, and that's been a really nice. He's changed my life and my family. I'll send him stuff Christmas because of you. Our life is better.
Yeah.
You know.
Very cool.
We're really appreciative of him. And he'll just say, thank you. But he doesn't. Yeah. It's like.
He doesn't want
to
hear
don't
you.
Wanna, you don't want to, you know, try to say, you know, oh, man, you're the best and all that. But he is a really giving person.
Yeah.
He's influenced a lot of people.
That's awesome. And I think he's influenced Land Speed Racing a lot, too.
Oh, well, he's.
So, you guys as a crew. You know.
There was something said to me this morning along those lines about George and stuff. And he said, God almighty, he's spending so much money on it. He goes on. I said, hey, let me tell you one thing about George. He don't have summer homes. He don't have yachts. He don't have airplanes.
He's got race cars.
That's his heartthrob. He don't care about all that.
I love it.
This is where he's at. He said, he's probably spent $10 million. I said, at least out here in 20 years. You know, I said,
yeah.
But I said, you could buy one yacht or one airplane, spend more than that. I said, this is
yeah,
him.
It's not cheap going fast.
Oh, he loves it. I said, you know, so.
Well, what is your most favorite, what is, besides the Speed Demon and Blowfish, what is one of your more favorite cars that you like to watch out here?
Oh, man.
Or is memorable to you?
You know, I don't know that I can pick one.
Mm.
There's so many cool cars out here.
There is.
And then every year, well, almost every year, somebody turns up with something else.
Yeah.
That's really unique and works good stuff. But I always admired what little I knew about it was Kugel Boys when they run 300 in that Firebird.
Yeah.
Because I knew what a dadgum obstacle or a hardship that was to put a door slammer 300.
Yeah.
And back then, they're figuring this stuff out themselves because I don't think they're going to wind tunnels or nothing else.
No.
You know, they're putting what they know in, come out and testing it, improving on that.
Mm-hmm.
And the best thing to me out here, one of the things that I really like coming out here is seeing what somebody's idea is and what they build. It may not run 150 mile an hour, but they're having a ball.
Yeah.
And it's such a fun place to come. And I remember when I come out here and we was running 160 and 70 miles an hour, and we thought we were setting the world on fire. And compared to the rest of the world, you are.
Yeah.
But compared out here, you're not.
Yeah.
But we're having as much fun as they are.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a really cool place to come. And I've yet to have any of my friends that's come out here that said, oh, that wasn't much fun.
You know, yeah.
I'll never do that again. Yeah. I mean, they just eat it up.
Yeah.
They hate to go home. And because they've never been here, they envision what's like out here, what's going on, but you have to experience it. It's one of those deals, you know, that it's like I told those guys at home, you know, they started in on me about running 300 and stuff. And I said, look, you know, it evolved into that. It's not like I'm the greatest driver. I said, I had one of the greatest cars, luckily to be sitting in the seat because there's 100 guys out here could have drove that. And I said, but I was fortunate enough to be with the right people, George mainly and Troy, because Troy's heart is just in the cars. I mean, nothing else matters to him either. His family is number one.
Yeah.
But I've never seen a person put more of his heart and soul into anything. It's when he's building somebody a car. It's going to beat his standards.
Very
or
cool.
It's not leaving the shop.
Very cool.
So the Blowfish was, I mean, he had a vision on that, and George brought him, I brought the car to him, 69 yeah. Barracuda we had.
Oh, it's a cool car.
Oh, when they got done with that car, I couldn't believe it was the same car, you know. And Adam Banks, his metal guy, is just unbelievable.
Mm.
He made that car. You know, he made all the front end. He done everything. He talked to Chrysler on the wind tunnel, what I need to do here, what dimensions. And they would give him ideas and tell him stuff. When he took that wind tunnel, that guy, Terry Canong, he said, I can't. You made that out of flat steel, you know. So, but they have such a good group of guys. They all know where they fit in and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Troy's he's the commander in chief, and I'm gonna tell you what, he's got some good people. But George is, you know, he's had 4 or 5 cars by Troy built and stuff, and they're all iconic cars. But that's because he gives them the monetary money to show what they could do.
Yeah.
A lot of people would love to build a car, but they don't have that kind of money that's spent on a car. But we go back to what I was talking about. George had been blessed his whole life with making money, and cars was his heartthrob. So he just pretty much, you know, to a large degree.
And how you started in Bonneville, you guys weren't spending a ton of money. It was like you guys came in and probably weren't spending, like, you know what I mean? It wasn't Speed Demon level money. You guys were coming out and you were learning it and having fun and just doing it. And I think that's like a good point. And it progressed. I mean, look what it progressed into. Just a bunch of boys trying it out and progressed into what it progressed into, which is pretty amazing.
George has been over 450 something.
Oh my gosh, that's incredible.
50 something. That's double everybody else put together.
Yeah.
At least double.
Yeah, yeah. It's impressive.
But you know, we got there about 5 years ago, we got in the mode like, if we didn't run over 400, something's wrong. and we sat back one day and said, you know what? We're just a little bit complacent on this because we're thinking we're not running as fast as we run over 400.
Yeah.
And I said,
we got to get a little perspective here.
Step back and appreciate every one of these paths because none of them are easy.
Yeah, no.
So,
I would agree.
But that's just the ride it's been and the things that we've got to do because of George. Mm-hmm. And because of him, I've got to meet everybody, you know, you and included, and people out in this Mecca and become friends with them, talk to them in off seasons and stuff. Some of them go by their shops. It's just a camaraderie of car people.
Mm-hmm.
They're different than anything else. Mm-hmm. I've been around for a while. But the car people are the ones that, you know, hey, I'm broke down over here 50 miles away from the house. I'll be right there, you know.
Yeah, that's so true. Well,
call AA. Somebody call AA. But it's just a great place, and we've had a great time. And I've been so, if I never get in another car out here, I mean, I couldn't be any more happy.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's awesome.
Well, thank you so much for coming and doing this interview. It's been awesome.
I'd
like to hear your story.
Thanks for listening to Land Speed Legends. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. In the meantime, keep up with the show on Facebook and Instagram under Land Speed Legends. Until next time.